Good morning and welcome to Back Chat. I'm Jim Gould.
And I'm Hugh Chiverton. This morning we're talking about the budget. The new Financial Secretary, Paul Chan, has unveiled his plan for the coming year in his first and what could be his only budget speech, with the current government's term ending in the summer. He announced a surplus of almost $93 billion for 2016-17. There'll be tax concessions and other giveaways, as well as increased spending on the elderly, on sports, on capital works and in other areas.
Mr. Chan also announced the setting up of a tax policy unit to examine possible changes to the territory's narrow tax base. So what did you make of the speech, and what's in it for Hong Kong? Was his approach much different from that of his predecessor, John Jung? Email us with your thoughts. Our email address is backchat@rthk.hk. That's backchat@rthk.hk. Or go to our Facebook page at Backchat on RTHK Radio 3 and leave a comment there. Or you can give us a call on 233-88-266. And after 9:20, we'll be talking about Donald Jung being sentenced to 20 months in prison. Also, a reminder that the Financial Secretary, Paul Chan, will be in our studio tomorrow morning from 8 until 9 a.m. So you can call in on that same number, 233-88-266, to put your questions and comments directly to him in a special budget phone-in programme. Well, joining us this morning, we have in our Admiralty studio, David Webb, shareholder, activist and founder of website.com. Peter Lee, former divisional president of for Greater China of CPA Australia. And Charles Kingsley, a tax partner with KPMG China. And joining us on the line is Wu Chi-wai, legislator and chairman of the Democratic Party. Good morning to you all.
Morning.
Good morning. Morning.
Okay, if we could start with Charles Kingsley. Could Paul Chan have been more generous with his budget, given the size of the surplus, $92.8 billion?
It was, I mean, certainly from our perspective, when you look at the budget overall, it was, we've seen and heard all of this before. So I think there was a hope that more would be done, but it was very much same old, same old.
Is there anything wrong with the same old, same old?
Well, you know, when you look at the surplus that's built up over the years, it's always been put away for a rainy day. How much do we need to put away for that rainy day? I think in order to look at other areas in stimulating the economy, making sure that we remain competitive, I think more could have been done.
There's a lot being spent this time, isn't there? There's more than $30 billion in tax concessions and so on, plus a lot of money being spent on the elderly, on sports, and no money is being put into the Future Fund, which was set up last time by John Jung.
Yeah, I mean, the amount that was being given back in concessions is broadly in line with last year. Some slightly different focus areas, but broadly the amount is much the same.
Okay, just put that to Peter Lee as well. Peter Lee, good morning to you.
Morning.
Thanks for joining us. What did you make overall of the budget? Is it the same story, same thing we've heard before?
Yeah, I think the Hong Kong government is still trying to use this a rather conservative approach. I think overall, you know, we think it's quite a comprehensive, quite a sound budget. And we're happy to see that the government is starting to look at long-term investment, you know, strategic investment, such as a tax reform. I think it's a very good thing. You know, we, CPA Australia, has been proposing to look in tax reform 17 years ago. And this is something important because the Hong Kong economy itself, for all these years, we've been relying on the forming economic pillars. And I think it's about time to start looking at to diversify, to getting to help other new economic drivers, such as innovation, because as you see, the two of the main pillars, tourism, logistics, they're not doing very well. If you look at the export services, actually it's down last year. So I think it's important to look at into new source of revenue, new type of tax revenue. I think that's important. But overall speaking, I think it's quite a sound budget, and obviously everyone expected to do more. But I think it's quite a balanced budget.
Is it too conservative?
But as you know, Hong Kong government, you know, has always been taking a rather conservative approach, and a lot of people say, well, we have a very large reserve. But if you look at year 2000, 2001, 2009, in fact, we had quite a large deficit. It's, if you look at 2001, almost 6% of GDP. So is it too much? Is that enough? The reserve, I don't know. But given the overall global uncertainty, you're looking at increasing protectionism, increased competition from our neighbor countries like Singapore. So is it enough? It's really hard to tell, because the next crisis that we might face will be bigger than 2008, 2000, you know.
Yeah, I mean, Charles Kingsley, there was a lot of talk of uncertainty, wasn't there, and about, you know, we don't know about this and we don't know about that. And the fact is that you say it's same old, but that's because it seems like these exceptional circumstances have persisted. But they could stop at any minute, couldn't they? The interest rates go up and the whole environment will change, and that could happen instantly.
I mean, the other thing to bear in mind is that there is a change in CE during the course of the year. So you're never going to expect anything too radical in a year of change. That new policies would typically be left to the new CE, and we've already seen some tax issues in the platform of the potential delegates. So there's certainly no expectation of radical reform. Mm. I mean, I pick up on Peter's point, the tax policy unit, I think it's also something we've been pushing for years. There's a number of little subgroups that have set up to advise, that have sort of independent forums looking to provide the government with input on tax policy. So it's good that there'll be something now within FSTB itself to focus on not only Hong Kong's competitiveness now, but going forward. And also looking at the problem with the narrow tax base, which is, it's inherent in the Hong Kong system.
Mm. Maybe we'll get on that in a moment. But David Webb, good morning to you.
Morning.
And thanks for joining us. So I suppose it's your familiar story as well.
Well, how many years have we been doing this now? I mean, every year I come on and say,
Okay, but I think the argument would be that you never know when it's going to change. And maybe this year...
We are running a structural surplus, and the government still won't admit it. They play sophistry with the numbers.
How do you distinguish between a structural surplus?
Year after year, we bring in more money than we spend. Mm. They never once talk about reducing.
They would say that's dependent on the unusual, unusual.
It's not unusual.
As you know, the interest environment is completely exceptional, isn't it?
It's been going on for 8 years.
Okay.
And that's it's not unusual to have fluctuating revenues.
Yeah.
Yes, you're sounding like the financial secretary. But
I'm just trying to put the contrary case.
Can't bank on that. You never know when a rainy day may come, or Armageddon, and you need to save up for 5 years without revenue and things like that, just in case no one pays taxes for 5 years, and then we actually run out of reserves. We have
2 years.
More than that, because they lie about that too. We don't have $900 billion of reserves. We have about 1.5 trillion, because there's $550 million of surplus sitting in the exchange fund, and it doesn't belong to the tooth fairy. It belongs to you and me through the government. It's taxpayers' money that's accumulated there as well. There's also another $300 billion in various other funds and statutory bodies, like the Housing Authority or the Mandatory Provident Fund Schemes Authority, which itself sits on $5 billion of cash that we gave it when it set up. If you add that up, it's about 1.8 trillion. But that number then, you've got 7 million people. You're well over $200,000 per person sitting in reserves. So we do have a buffer. And don't forget, of course, the government can always borrow during fluctuations as well. Most governments don't have reserves at all. They have net debt, and they still have good credit ratings, and they can borrow to get themselves through fluctuations in revenue. Now, the tax... so-called tax rebates that are coming out again this year are the same amount as we rebated last year, basically. It's the same 75% of salaries tax up to $20,000, 75% of profits tax up to $20,000. And because we paid those rebates last year and still made a $92 billion surplus, that means that we're well on track to record again another surplus in this year's budget. To suggest that you're somehow reducing revenues.
For the next 5 years, you did say there would be surpluses for the next 5 years.
Yeah, I mean, his own budget suggests $18 billion of surplus in the new financial year, and it will be well above that, because they always under budget on things like land revenues and stamp duty. There was no I mean, the only pillar of the only sort of glimmer of hope in there is that he is setting up a committee to review the tax structure, and if he keeps his job after the 1st of July, then perhaps he will follow through on that, because, you know, goodness knows, several others around this table have offered to advise and provided proposals on reforming the tax structure over the years, and it's fallen on deaf ears for 10 years under John Chang. So there's nothing in this budget that resolves that. All they're doing is just playing around with rebates. If you go to the buzzwords in the budget, which is always a slightly fun exercise to do, you can see mercifully there's only two mentions of Belt and Road. So I thought that was a plus, that he's not really parroting the mainland point of view. He talks about the so-called narrow tax base three times. That's not true, by the way. We have low taxes, but we don't have narrow taxes. Anyone who makes a profit pays profits tax. And there were 9 hubs, 8 fintechs, 24 innovations, and 37 technologies. And so he's a little bit obsessed with innovation and technology.
A lot of INT, yeah.
That's been going on, you know, since 5000 BC, basically. And you know, there's always innovation and technology in any economy. But I disagree with my fellow guest that we should somehow direct the economy or centrally plan the economy into new pillars. We shouldn't have any pillars at all. If they're doing fine, and he repeatedly talks about sectors where we have an advantage. If those sectors have an advantage, why do they need government help in the form of subsidies or handouts?
All right, Peter Lee, can you help on that?
Yeah, well, if you compare to our main competitors in the region, for example, Singapore, obviously, you know, probably say, well, I mean, a lot of people try to compare Hong Kong Singapore, but obviously we see Hong Kong... Our competitiveness is falling behind Singapore in a lot of areas. If you look at asset management, wealth management, you know, Singapore, Hong Kong has always been very strong capital market in terms of wealth management, asset management. But over the past 5 to 7 years, we see Singapore has been catching up very quickly, trying to attract foreign companies going in to set up headquarters, set up the presence in Singapore instead of coming to Hong Kong. And we see that as a trend. For example,
I don't think it's either or. They can have headquarters in Hong Kong for China, and they can have headquarters in Singapore for Southeast Asia.
We don't have to. If they're doing favors to a particular industry, we're going to lose out, because obviously the people will go there.
Fine. You know, if they want to squander their resources that way, we've always had an open
And the people will go there.
That's not true, actually. I mean, there's plenty of reasons to have asset management here as well, and the surveys from the SFC each year demonstrate growth in that sector, so we're not doing too badly. What the government has proposed, which I support, is one step in the right direction to exempt onshore funds, open-ended funds, which are privately offered, not authorized mutual funds, from profits tax. So they can be clear when they market to their fund holders that the investments, that the gains that they make and the dividends they receive won't be subject to tax, because dividends have already been taxed through the profits tax system. So that will encourage more funds to domicile in Hong Kong. But the devil's in the details. It's not clear whether there's going to be limits on how many shares can be owned by Hong Kong people and so on.
And also the other issue on this regulation. The current offshore regime, the funds don't have to be regulated. The new proposal is they will have to be regulated by the SFC, which pushes up the cost.
Yeah. Well, the SFC is moving in mysterious ways very, very recently as well. So we'll have to see. There's something in the budget about the GEM board and the fluctuations and volatility on the GEM board. This is a fact of life with small companies and closely held shares, that you can get big departures from what most people would regard as fair value, but that's what makes an open market, and buyers don't have to buy at inflated prices if they don't want to. But yesterday, after trying to talk this down by issuing guidelines 2 months ago, yesterday the SFC suspended a GEM stock halfway through its first day after it had gone up about 500%. And the question then is, why aren't you suspending all the other bubbles? How is this company supposed to do anything about it, because it can't control what its shareholders do? So the SFC is becoming more interventionist generally, and that's a worrying thing. I'd expect that kind of behaviour in the mainland. I wouldn't expect it in Hong Kong.
Okay, well, this morning we also have on the line legislator and chairman of the Democratic Party, Wu Chi-wai. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
So what's Hello, good morning. So what's your assessment of Paul Chan's budget?
Well, basically, I think what I have seen Paul Chan's basically in photo footprint 14 from John Zhang, And so this is not surprise. There's nothing surprising in this budget. And as you said, all the guests we can have said, they may want to see a lot of investment measures, you know, say on the to attract, you know, say more investment to come in to Hong Kong. But it is not simply can be answered by the budget proposal. It has to be answered by the whole government. So it is not likely then, you say, that can be the work done by Paul Chan in this new day budget, because, you know, the CE election is coming and there will be a change of the CE. So I think in that area, I've seen basically Paul Chan is simply follow what John Zhang has done in the past and try to, but you know, say, I think he has not live up to the expectation of the general public in Hong Kong, in particular when the the budget surplus is so huge, which is, say, even higher than the last year's, and the Swiss that, you know, say, he has provided to the people is basically less, more or less the same as last year, and he has not covered up state in particular, both and have not, which is, you know, say, has been a huge criticism coming from the last budget that, you know, say, when the government would try to provide some Swiss to the people, why not, you know, say, they can come up with some solutions or, you know, some ideas to cover up also, you know, say, those and have not. So, you know, say, that will be the deficiency of this particular budget in my eyes, of in my point of view.
But wouldn't you agree that the sweeteners, or so-called sweeteners, that welfare shouldn't be based on whether we made a surplus or not in the budget. It should be based on what people's needs are.
Well,
we shouldn't yeah. be saying you can't have a handout, you can't have money because we didn't bring in enough and we've made a deficit. And surely the level of welfare should be determined by needs and not treated like a profit-sharing scheme of the government.
I agree on that area. So, say, you can see in the budget, Paul Chan tried to set aside about 30 billion that, you know, say, asking the welfare department or welfare bureaus to provide the proposals to address to the deficiency of those number of, you know, say, seats or pace, you know, for those elderly and also for the disabled. So I think, you know, say, that is a good direction, but, you know, say, from my point of view, I will see the welfare department should come up with a comprehensive consultation and get a result. Just like, you know, the long-term, you know, the housing strategies, then, you know, the government, they come with the consensus from the society saying that, you know, in the coming 10 years, the government has to build, you know, amounts of, you know, number of beds. As a result, they need money, and then they ask the FS to provide the resources. And I think that should be the procedural things that, in order for the FS to come up with the ideas, because in this particular budget, we have no grants, or we don't know the grants for the FS to simply set aside 30 billion of money to support, you know, say, the coming welfare needs. But whether or not it is enough, we don't know. Whether or not, you know, they how the plan will be, we don't know. So I think that is something.
Yes, you need bottom up spending plans for that. It's just all he's doing at the moment is waving his hands in the air and saying 30 billion for this, 20 billion for that. Sports, well, you know, it all sounds good, but it hasn't yet been. You know, the departments concerned have not been advocating how to spend it. And that's a real question mark. But again, we've got plentiful reserves to do these things without raising more revenues.
What about the review, the review unit, Wu Chi Wai? What do you think it should be the priority questions there?
You mean the tax review, right?
Yeah, if they do a tax review, what do you think are the main issues? What are the main problems we should be looking at?
From the budget, it seems to me that the FS has not concluded the lesson from the last, you know, say, tax reviews. In particular, when recall the last tax reviews, the basic argument is how the government will make use of the money in the future. If the government tries to do the tax review, what objective it is it is the tax bill is not simply for we try to make more money for the government, because the government has a lot of money already. But we have to, I mean, the government should first answer in what area we really need money on a recurrent basis.
He did.
The government has not, say, provided any answer on that. He simply said that, say, the government needs more money because, say, our tax base is so narrow and we need to expand it. That is not the way to do the review of the tax.
He also talked about using the tax system to support diversification of industries and therefore offer more job choices to people.
Yeah, it's a euphemism for subsidies. I mean, he said, for example, we will look at whether we can give greater tax deductions for I and T spending. Well, first of all, it's very hard to define what the I and T spending is. But secondly, we already do 100% depreciation allowances for computer equipment, for example, in your first year.
They have provided $10 billion of money, to help in that area. Already.
Again, waving hands and saying $10 billion because it's a nice round number. We count in base 10, and so that it makes it easy. But what for exactly? Because I and T happens on its own anyway. People use technology every day. They try to make their businesses more efficient, using more computerized accounting systems, sales systems, reducing labor requirements. They do all of that without being offered incentives. And I don't see why the government should be reducing, basically giving handouts to companies by giving them, say, a 200% allowance on their technology spending and saying, we'll give you effectively $16.50 for every $100 that you spend because we'll exempt another $100 from tax. What they should be doing, and to the point about competition from Singapore, is actually reducing the flat rate of tax applicable to all profits and salaries because we're raising too much revenue. And we bring in about $150 billion per year of profits tax and salaries tax with a top rate of 15 or 16.5%. So if we brought that down to 10%, we would basically lose about $50 billion of revenue, and you'd still have a surplus because we had $92 billion surplus last year. Now, a 10% rate of tax would be very appealing, I think, to multinationals looking to put their Asian headquarters somewhere here rather than Singapore if they're not in one of Singapore's favoured sectors, because don't forget, when Singapore does that and says, OK, you can have a 5% rate of tax if you're an asset manager or something, or 0% for 5 years, that comes at a cost to them, and they have to raise it from the other businesses in their economy. So their overall rates of tax are probably higher than ours.
But then typically, in order to take advantage of the incentive in Singapore, there are further requirements. Yeah, typically, it relates to headcount spend.
And employing Singaporeans and so on.
There is more to the Singapore incentives. The other thing you see with Singapore is they have more taxes than Hong Kong.
The point is, overall, their budget, their government is bigger. They have an armed forces, for example, that we don't have to pay for. So they will overall be taking more out of the economy in taxation of various kinds than we need to. We've been taking out way too much. We've built up this $1.5 trillion surplus. And simply cutting taxes to 10% and keeping them there for probably the next 10 or 15 years would bring the surpluses down close to zero and maybe even to a deficit in which we could bleed the reserves back into the economy, which would be very stimulative. And that would be good for both employment and for business.
But if that's seen as attractive, it's going to bring...
I think that would generate a huge debate on how we should make use of our budget surplus or our reserve. Because as we all know, to attract investment coming from outside, it's not simply because of the tax scales, but it depends on all other factors. Take, for example, the provision of land, the provision of, human resources, and other infrastructure things. So I think, if you simply put in the argument, think that, if we can lower down the tax, and then we can attract...
I'm not saying that's the only thing we should do.
That may be one of the ways. So I think that is the government should answer. It's not simply the FS to answer the question.
It's not the only thing we should do, certainly. I mean, there are other things, for example, on land. Why is it the government decides how many hotels there should be by saying this piece of land is a piece of hotel land? I mean, it's all brown land.
Agree.
Yeah. Why don't they just auction the land and find out what the best use is through the market forces? If people want to build a hotel on the site this year, they can do it. And if 5 years' time or 10 years' time they want to turn it into an office building or residential, they should do that. You know, we shouldn't have the government centrally planning the land allocation system, and we certainly shouldn't have them decide deciding that Lok Ma Chau Loop is going to be a technology innovation thing hub cluster, because, you know, that's not the optimal way to allocate land.
What about this question of the tax base and whether it's too narrow? Peter Lee, do you think it's too narrow?
Yeah, well, we believe the tax base is quite narrow because if you look at the, you know, how the government, they predict, they estimate the tax revenue, all these years have been very difficult to predict because of the land sales, because land sales is very hard to predict, because if you're trying to do the budget at the beginning of the year, it's very hard to predict how much land sales are going to make. So that's why we need to widen the tax base to be able to allow for us to have a better estimate of the tax revenue, because what we need is less volatility. So
doesn't really matter when you've got $1,500 billion of reserves. So,
well, it does, because we're trying to balance the budget.
You can buffer through those reserves.
Well,
you're never going to get perfectly smooth revenues, but one thing you could do is raise ground rents on new land leases, and over time, that would produce smoother revenues, because instead of paying 3% of rateable value on your ground rent for the site, you would be paying perhaps 30% of rateable value and a lower land premium. So that would reduce the quantum of land premiums overall. That would certainly smooth out the revenue inflows. But unless the government's planning to run the reserves down to zero and possibly into a healthy level of borrowings, they don't really need to care about whether it fluctuates up or down by $100 billion each year.
Well, that's a good idea. But however, we still have to look at to widen the tax base.
Well, I disagree that it's narrow. I mean, everybody who is subject to profits tax pays it. The fact is that there aren't that many... as a proportion of the population, there's a large number of people who are below the thresholds at which they pay meaningful amounts of salaries tax,
narrow. We'll have to suspend the discussion there for a few moments because we've got a break for the news at 9 o'clock. We'll be back at 3 minutes past. We're talking about the budget. You can email us on backchat@rthk.hk. Give us a call on 233 88 266. A quick look at the weather. It's going to be cloudy to overcast with a few rain patches and getting cooler. A few rain patches in the next couple of days. Morning temperatures down to about 12 degrees. Currently 19 degrees. Humidity 93%. Welcome back to Backchat. So we're talking about the budget this morning. And with us, we have shareholder activist and founder of the website.com, David Webb, and also Peter Lee, former divisional president of Greater China for CPA Australia, and Charles Kinsley, a tax partner with KPMG China.
Hugh? Yeah, and later we're also going to be talking about the sentence for Donald Jung. If you've got any thoughts on that 20 months, then do email us, backchat@rthk.hk. Maybe you've got thoughts on the case of the police officers and that rally, that massive rally last night. Then once again, you can email backchat@rthk.hk. Or you can go to our Facebook page, that's Backchat and RTHK Radio 3, and share your thoughts there with the world. Let's go back to the budget now, and a reminder that Paul Chan is going to be with us tomorrow to answer directly your questions. Charles Kinsley, this point about the where do you stand on the point about the narrowness of the tax base? I mean, Paul Chan said, as John Jung has said many times, and Henry Tang said before him, that we rely too much. The revenue comes from a few industries. It's volatile and that it's unstable. Basically, any sort of volatility in the global market would significantly affect government revenue and fiscal affordability. Do you agree with that? And if so, what's the cure?
Yeah, I mean, I certainly take David's point that it's very, when you look in the current environment when we're running surpluses year after year, to say that there is no revenue base, it's clearly that, you know, people are paying taxes, we're getting revenue from land sales. Do we have an infinite supply of land? Can we rely on that forever? So I suppose looking to plan more for that eventuality. But the other point is coming back to the overall, just the unit itself. I mean, one of the aims of it is to look at Hong Kong's competitiveness.
It's interesting it's got these two aims, hasn't it? Yeah. And I'm not sure, are they related or unrelated, or does one follow from the other? I'm not sure.
I think you've got to look at, when you're looking at whether we're competitive or not, if you're coming up with other ideas for broadening the tax system, you've got to look at it overall.
But it's not, we actually need to eliminate some taxes to make ourselves more competitive. It's not, I don't think we have a narrow tax base. I think we have too much revenue. It suggests the opposite.
Why is it not the opposite?
Are you saying we don't have enough types of tax? Is that your complaint?
Because it doesn't come from enough sources. We're reliant on too few industries. No, not the types of tax.
All industries pay the same rate of profits tax.
It's a question of the industries that are providing this. And if all our eggs are in the real estate basket, then when the real estate basket falls over,
the biggest sector is trade.
Egg on our face.
The biggest sector is trade here, not real estate, in terms of the profits tax that it pays. That is what it is. Hong Kong's always been a trade port. It has been since 1841 and will continue to be for a long, long time.
Well, no, 40%
of profit changes over time.
Sorry, no, hang on. 40% of profit tax comes from financial and real estate industries.
Well, there's a large portion of it from trade. I don't have the numbers in front of me.
Well, I'm telling you, 40% comes from real estate, and that's an unhealthy concentration.
I think you're talking about general total revenues, including land premiums.
Okay, I'm talking about profits tax.
Okay, well, we'll go back to the numbers another time. But the point is, there is a huge amount of trade that goes through Hong Kong, and it doesn't really matter what we are spending our time doing, whether it's making plastic flowers as we used to and transistor radios, or whether it's trading goods from China, or whether it's running high technology startups. The point is that we do have plentiful revenues, but we do have some very unfriendly policies as regards attracting investment into Hong Kong. For example, if you want to come here and set up an office and fit it out, you would like to actually own that office, but if you do that now, you're going to have to pay 8.5% stamp duty unless you're fortunate to find a way to avoid it by buying a company that owns an office unit. So that's a pretty negative message to send to people, saying if you're going to come here and start something up, you really need to rent. You're not allowed to buy. And if you're going to bring in some employees, some expertise and skill sets that Hong Kong could use, then those people won't be allowed to buy residential property for 7 years, because if they try, we will hit them with a punitive 30% stamp duty.
You see, the thing is,
purchase.
if you look at the sources of revenue for the Hong Kong government, you've got 14%.
No, let's just stick to competitiveness for a moment.
14% comes from land sales.
I haven't got the table that you've got in front of me.
No, I'm just reading from the budget. 14% comes from land sales.
So in that case, not a major worry if it fluctuates by 50% of that. That's a
7%. Yeah, but that's not the
movement.
End of the story. I'm saying 14% directly from land sales. Mm-hmm. Then you've got the money that comes from stamp duty, which is... I haven't got that percentage with me.
It's about 60 billion, about 12%.
Okay, so you've got 12% from stamp duty. Okay, and then you've got the profits tax paid by the developers. This all funnels down to one area of income.
Profits tax is not just paid by developers.
To get all your money from one source in this way.
It's not, profits tax is not just paid by developers, Hugh. And all of the profits tax is about 120
billion.
But
40% of it comes, 40% of profit tax receipts come from financial and real estate industries.
Yeah, you're including the land premiums then, if you're talking about...
I'm talking about profits tax receipts. I quote to you from the budget speech.
Well, it's wrong
financial
in several areas,
and,
like
financial
reserves
and
as well.
Real estate industries contribute over 40% of the profits tax receipts.
Okay, fine. They do. That's the developers' profits and the estate agents and the construction sector and various other parts to do with it. So what? But what is the issue here? People pay profits tax. There is not a narrow tax base. Some people have advocated things like GST in the past, saying that it's just, and that wasn't very popular when they proposed it. But that is basically just a gross profits tax, because it would be a tax on the revenues of companies, and they would offset the GST they paid on their inputs. There's materials and supplies, and so all you'd be doing is taking another chunk of profits tax higher up the income statement and then taxing the profits that remain at the bottom with profits tax. It's very inefficient to do it that way. It's expensive, and it also violates our status as a free port, which is in the basic law. So I don't think the GST should be put forward. What we need to be looking at is making our tax structure more competitive, eliminating barriers like the barrier on on skill sets coming into Hong Kong and telling them they can't buy a home for 7 years. I mean, if you want to make a commitment to Hong Kong, there's no greater commitment than buying a home, and we're saying don't do that for 7 years, or you'll be paying 30% stamp duty. We also have still not tackled the housing loophole, so people are taxed not on how much they're paid, but how they're paid. If you receive a part of your salary, your remuneration as a housing reimbursement, that will not be properly taxed. It's only taxed as 10% of your remaining income. And that ought to have been abolished long ago, but hasn't. So there are a lot of things we could do to make ourselves simpler and more competitive without introducing new taxes, and we should be eliminating some of them.
Okay.
I think part of the policy unit, though, is to look at taxation as a whole. I mean, there's parts of the Inland Revenue Ordinance that haven't been updated since it was put in place. There's, you know, we keep hearing that it's a simple tax system, but if anyone's looked at the regulatory capital securities section of the Inland Revenue Ordinance, try and understand that. So we're moving. We've got some very old pieces of legislation, hasn't kept up with the pace of change in how we do business today, and we've got some new, you know, rather developed and intricate sections. The other point is then, you know, in a recent survey that KPMG did of senior executives just pre the budget, it said, is Hong Kong competitive? Around 90% said Hong Kong is competitive today, but when asked what about the future, the figure drops to below 50%. So the concern is that we need to, and this is, you know, my view, one of the reasons for the policy unit is to look at what we need to do to remain competitive amongst the other countries that we compete with. So the, you know, yeah, just reducing tax rates, the UK is reducing tax rates to below 20%. If Donald Trump gets his way, you know, the US could have a lower tax rate than Hong Kong. So purely the tax rate, yeah, benefit that we've had in the past will disappear. I mean, so we do need to look at other areas.
Hugh, to your point that 40% of profits tax, which is 30% of revenues, so it's 12% of revenues comes from the tax on the real estate sector. That is partly because of this very distorted land premium system, which I mentioned earlier. If we cut down land premiums by raising ground rents, then there'd be more competition in the development sector. There wouldn't be just a handful of companies dominating that sector. And their profits taxes then, and their profits would reduce. But the profits that they forego would be earned by the people who use the property, the businesses and shops and so on that end up either buying or renting that property. So you would shift the distribution of taxpayers within the system because you'd be removing a cartel. And so that would rebalance the economy. And the government so far, because of the way it's elected, and let's not forget that's the big picture here, because of the way it's elected, won't tackle a lot of these thorny issues. They won't diminish the dominance of the major developers who have votes in so many of the subsectors, the hotel sector and the retail sector and the transportation sector and so on, in the election committee that chooses the chief executive.
Okay, some comment from listeners. Thank you very much indeed. Mary says, this posting to the South China Morning Post sums it up, and she quotes something that was posted to the South China Morning Post. Comments, I assume. And the comment is, so this is how it works. Government snatches all our parks, open spaces, greenbelt, playing fields, country parks, rezones them and sells them to developers. Then it gets an embarrassing windfall of land revenue it doesn't know what to do with, even after funding every white elephant development wily operators can conjure up. So it then perpetuates the sweetness policy that makes a mockery of our tax system in an attempt to bribe the community and deflect intelligent analysis. Some of the bounty goes to building new recreational facilities so that some years down the line they can be rezoned and sold to developers. Wake up, folk. Are you that dumb? Thanks very much indeed for that comment. Sam, in an email, says, dear Backchat, it's more of the same. Same old rhetoric. Sweeteners and prudent are the catchphrases. People need to live in the present and not in the future. Take the sweeteners for landlords versus tenants. A landlord enjoys the same sweetness provided to a tenant and more, in that a landlord enjoys tax rebates on rates. However, the same rate rebate is not passed on to a tenant who pays house rent out of his pocket. Furthermore, why is there no rent control mechanism brought in? A tenant is a person who is caught between a rock and a hard place, not being able to purchase a home and at the mercy of the landlords. There is nothing in the budget to address this issue. Inland Revenue Department is aware how many apartments are owned by a person. Why cannot the Financial Secretary take away all welfare payments and old age allowance out of tax incentives and introduce a decent pension where an old age person can live with dignity? The Financial Secretary does want to put his mind to the pension issue as he is a pensioner and it does not bother him. him. Same goes to the chief executive candidates. This is a problem. Planners are unable to think out of the box and walk that extra mile. One fine day when the reserves evaporate and no one will reap the benefits other than the current pensioners and those handful who qualify. That comes from Sam.
But in terms of these reserves being stashed away, let's not forget that the basic law promises to keep Hong Kong's way of life the way it was expire in 30 years' time. So we'd have to spend and run down the reserves at the rate of $50 billion a year for the next 30 years in real terms to actually get rid of those reserves. Otherwise, we'll just be handing over this huge dowry of Cleopatra to the mainland. On rents and housing, the government has proposed extending the mortgage interest deduction to 20 years at $100,000 a year from salaries tax. So that's the amount of interest that you can spend and deduct from your income when paying salaries tax each year. That is a distortion of the system, which incentivizes people to pile into these shoeboxes so that they can get the deduction. But if you're a tenant, you don't get that. You can't offset your rent against your salary. Why is that? Why is it fair to say that we require you to own rather than rent in order to get that deduction? So, I mean, that should be abolished, as many economies have done.
What about that question of the competitiveness? Peter Lee, where do you stand? I mean, is it a race to the bottom? If the UK and the US and everyone wants to cut tax and have a competition to see who can get the lowest tax, do we join in or what?
Well, so for instance, last year we did a survey back in October and last year, we did a tax survey. So about 45% of respondents said we are, in terms of competitiveness, we're behind Singapore because of tax incentives. So, you know,
who were you surveying? Who were you talking to?
Our members. So we have about 15,000 members in Hong Kong and China. So we recommend, some of the initiative, for example, there's something I think tax is very important because at the end of the day, for company to want to set up presence in Hong Kong, at the end of the day, to pay tax.
So you undercut your neighbour and then they undercut you and it's just a race to the point.
To the point where you start to destroy social services. No. I mean, there is a competition between countries around the world to run their countries efficiently in order to attract people to work and live there and run businesses there. And so if you raise tax rates and throw money around wantonly, you will end up driving people away. And there is that competition going on. The UK is cutting its corporate tax rate, I think, to 17% very soon.
17 to 18, yeah.
And so it's only 0.5% higher than Hong Kong's tax rate, which used to be a lot lower. And that, of course, means that there's no longer an incentive to shift your profits if you're importing goods through Hong Kong to the UK, to shift the profits to Hong Kong and overprice the imports to the UK, because now you may as well pay the profits tax in the UK at the similar or same rate. So that competition between countries is a healthy thing. It deters governments from buying votes by promising big handouts to people who don't need them and then raising taxes, for example, because suddenly they find that there's nothing to tax. The profits have gone away. And in our case, it's mainland China with a 25% tax rate. If we were to say, for example, that we can give everybody $5,000 a month when they reach 65, pretty soon we'd have to raise our tax rates to the same or higher than China's, and the import-export firms that have been shifting profits to Hong Kong will no longer do so. As soon as those rates start to converge, they will keep their profits in China, particularly if China has become a more open capital account.
Well, so that's why we have to widen the tax base. We have to look at new source of revenue.
That's why we have to run an efficient government.
Where could those new sources of revenue come from, do you think, Peter Lee?
Well, the few things we're looking at, for example, similar in GST, but
goods and services tax.
Goods and services tax, because we need more a structural reform in terms of the tax system. We have to look at new source of revenue, which is a bit more stable.
Like what?
Like
there's no free lunch in this. The more money you take out of the economy, whatever you call it, whether it's stamp duty, profits tax, salaries tax, walking on the street tax, wearing red hat tax, you're still going to be collecting money from the economy. And the more you do, the less competitive you are as an economy. So it's important to both raise resources wisely and spend them wisely, and not give, for example, give me a $2 fare card when I reach 65. I mean, that's going to be great, and I'll certainly take it, but I shouldn't be entitled to it. I'm not going to be poor, and I won't need that kind of handout. It's already costing the government $1.2 billion per year just to subsidize the transport system for people over 65, and the number of people over 65 is growing rapidly.
Events like carbon tax, you look at Singapore also recommend a carbon tax
as
well.
And speaking of carbon, they've abolished the first registration tax exemption for electric vehicles, except for the first first $200,000 will still be exempt, paying $97,500 otherwise. But basically, the cost of a well-known electric car that normally costs $600,000 is now going to be $990,000, including the FRT. The question really is, why do we have first registration tax at all? Because it doesn't matter whether someone owns a car, it's whether they drive it on the streets. So why don't we have just congestion pricing and fuel taxes to deal with that, and not tax people on a sort of envy basis on how much their car cost? Because it goes up to 115% for any amount over $500,000. Well, if my neighbor wants to buy an expensive car, I think that's his issue. If he wants to buy an expensive painting or a diamond, that's his issue. I don't think I should be taxing him on that.
Well, maybe we should. We should have a luxury tax. A tax on luxury items.
A tax on envy. Otherwise, people just go overseas and buy their diamonds.
You take tax from people who can afford it.
At a flat rate from people who can afford it by salaries and profits taxes. I mean, if they happen to have investments, the companies they invest in will be paying the profits tax before they can distribute any dividends. So, we need to have a fair system and not one based on envy and trying to tax luxury goods like China does. What happens when China does that is that people come to Hong Kong and buy their luxury watches and jewellery and so on, throw away the boxes and wear it home without paying the Chinese tax. They just avoid it.
Yes, okay. I think at the end of the day, someone has to pay the bill. So I think at the end of the day, we have to have a balanced view, where to get the money and where to spend it. So if we could just keep spending, but somehow we have to generate the revenue.
It's a conversation to be continued. Thanks very much to everyone for taking part. Peter Lee there with CPA Australia. Also David Webb, shareholder activist and founder of website.com, and Charles Kinsley, tax partner with KPMG China. And also thank you earlier, Wu Chi-wai, chairman of the Democratic Party.